Every Wednesday, a chance to visit with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. Great minor league information as well as major league information on the St. Louis Cardinals and baseball as a whole. And you can find it at thecardinalnation.com. We visit with Brian every Wednesday. As always, Brian, good to hear your voice. How are things going?
It's going great, Dan. It's a pleasure to be on as always.
You got it. Let's start with the manager of the year. We've got Don Mattingly in the National League. I thought it should go to Don Mattingly. I was disappointed Mike Schilt wasn't even a finalist. You had David Ross on there. You had Jace Tingler. Goes to Don Mattingly. I have no problem with this. I thought he should win it.
Mike Schilt came in sixth. He got 3 second-place votes and 1 third-place votes. Frankly, I think the whole finalist thing is just non-news anyway. Whether David Ross came in fourth or Brian Snicker third or Brian Snicker came in fourth, who cares? I mean, I just wish they'd announce the dang winners and shares. But whatever. Don Mattingly, very deserving. He got 20 first-place votes, double of what all the other candidates got together. And I think we all saw that the challenges that the Miami Marlins faced early on with all the COVID cases and, you know, the fact that their farm system wasn't nearly as rich as St. Louis's with Major League-ready players. So they had to go out and, you know, basically sign and grab a bunch of guys off the waiver wire. And he did a very good job of keeping his team, you know, in contention and, you know, making the playoffs. And I think they certainly far exceeded anybody's expectations. And I think for that reason, Mattingly was a great choice.
Over in the American League, Tampa Bay's Kevin Cash, and this is done before postseason play. So don't worry about that Game 6 decision in the World Series. How did you think that fell to Kevin Cash? Were you happy with it?
Well, you know, you look at what Tampa Bay is able to do with a minimum amount of payroll. Now, you know, a lot of that is certainly the front office that puts together the team. But, you know, Cash has to push the buttons of putting the right guys in the lineup and the right combination of guys. And, you know, it's overstated, and there's no doubt. But the American League East is a difficult division. The Red Sox are down a tad now. But Toronto's always tough. The Yankees are always tough. And for them to excel the way that they did, again, I think that's a very good choice. It's disappointing to see Rick Renteria, who came in a strong second, you know, lose his job again the second time in Chicago as their respective clubs wanted a more name brand manager. But, you know, Kevin Cash was, pretty much the landslide winner in the American League. And again, I think that was a very good choice.
I am fascinated to see what happens with the Mets with new ownership and a guy that's got really deep pockets. He is a Mets fan, and he claimed yesterday that within 3 to 5 years, he thinks they can win a world championship. He'd be disappointed if they didn't win a world championship. So how do you think this changes the game a little bit in terms of what they may do and going out and trying to sign some of the top free agents in baseball as we look forward?
Well, I think Steve Cohen did a very good thing. And obviously he's a smart cookie or he wouldn't be as wealthy as he is. But, you know, he went out and, had a Zoom call, actually went directly to the fan base and the Mets fan base has been long suffering under the prior ownership that had their issues with the Madoff and the Ponzi scheme, and they didn't have enough money to really invest in the club. And Steve Cohen's really been, you know, come in and been a breath of fresh air. But on the baseball side, he's bringing in Sandy Alderson to be the team president. He's going to bring in a baseball operations exec under him. So they're going to bring in people who, and Sandy Alderson, very well respected. I mean, he goes back to the A's, when La Russa was there. So, and, worked in MLB's offices and really knows the game well. So they're going to put people in charge who know what's going on. Steve Cohen's going to allow them to spend money. And that's certainly going to put the Mets in the group of a half a dozen, eight, you know, maybe teams that are going to be spending money this year when a lot of the other clubs like the Cardinals are looking to tighten belts. And one of the other things that Cohen said I thought was very interesting was we need pitching and we need a good catcher. And, everybody knows that happens to be what the St. Louis Cardinals have on the market right now. So there's been no direct connection to Wainwright and Molina, but you'd think they would be certainly guys that the Mets might want to take a look at among a number of other teams.
Minor league teams, Crosstown in the Bronx, there was some frustration with the minor league affiliates and the future of those affiliates with the Yankees. I'm sure there's going to be some frustration as we get closer to the baseball season and see the elimination of some minor league teams. What are you hearing on the whole with that, Brian, and what do you think happens with the Cardinals?
Well, it's interesting, Dan. The one league that was basically the teams were owned by Major League Baseball, which is the Appalachian League, they've already been converted basically to a Summerwood bat league. And Major League Baseball decided they do is they take one league and have it be an entry-level league, you know, for the youngest players, have the Cape Cod League be the league for the juniors, and then the New York Penn League, which is a league that State College, the other Cardinals affiliate, affected by this move, that would be then part of a league that would have a summer wood bat league for college seniors right before the draft. And the deadline was supposedly today, or actually yesterday, on Tuesday, for the New York Penn League teams to commit to say, hey, yes, I want to be a part of this wood bat league, or no, I do not. Now, there could be some other shuffling around, as some teams might move from class to class or that type of thing. But, you know, the whole purpose of these moves, or one of the purposes, is to have better geographic concentration of teams. And State College is, you know, basically out in the middle of Pennsylvania. It's 2.5 hours from Pittsburgh. From Pittsburgh. And so, you know, there really aren't any clusters of teams around there. And so, the challenge would be for State College, do they go to this wood bat league or do they, you know, potentially cease to exist? So the Cardinals are, you know, likely to run with two fewer farm teams, State College and Johnson City, short season teams being out of the system, which would create a very big jump from the Gulf Coast League, the rookie level league, where it's typically the entry level, all the way to Class A. The other move that's rumored to occur is that the High A Florida State League, which is the next step up from Class A, which is Peoria, that those would actually switch levels. And so the Class A team for the Cardinals would be in Florida, which makes sense. They kind of keep everybody concentrated. And then the Peoria and the Midwest League, the teams that survived in that league, would then move to the High A classification.
Sure.
With the next step up being a Double A Springfield.
Wait, we need to get clarification on the designated hitter probably sooner than later. Free agency period is here, especially for National League teams. There's a talk of expansion of playoffs. How do you think this all unfolds for Major League Baseball?
Well, I think everybody, and John Mozeliak talked about it on our Zoom call a couple weeks ago, you know, it would be ideal for everyone if some of these questions could get answered. The designated hitter, the expanded playoffs, roster sizes, you know, all those things. The challenge is that there are the same questions that had to be negotiated last year that took months for the players and owners to agree on have to be all negotiated again. What happens if they can't play 162 games? How much will the players get paid? At what rate? What about service time? All the same questions that they had to argue last year have to be argued again. And so the designated hitter is going to be perceived to be a give to one side and a takeaway from the other. And so the chances of that getting resolved quickly, as much as everybody might like it, probably isn't going to happen because it's going to get tied up in all these other big questions that have to get answered. And as much as that is a potential inconvenience, the reality is if we go back to 2020, they didn't decide those things until, what, late May or early June, and everybody got along okay. Again, not ideal, but I'm not optimistic that they're going to pick off some of these easy ones and negotiate them with until they solve all these other big questions. I hope I'm wrong, but that's my take.
In terms of your top 50 list of the St. Louis Cardinals, we're going to shift gears. And Brian Walton, my guest of thecardinalnation.com, shift gears and talk about what I love in this offseason. You go your top 50 prospects starting from 50 and ending on number one. So you're in the top 7 or 8 right now, or at least the bottom 7 of 8, I guess I should say, of the top 50 as we head to number one. How do you come up with this, Brian, if you don't have a minor league season? How tough has this been at trying to figure out who's had a little progression, who's come back down to maybe a lower level, whatever the case may be, but how are you trying to do this for your top 50 prospects?
Well, I was down in Florida for instructional camp last January. Unfortunately, minor league camp, as most folks know, didn't ever really get started. Literally, the same day that minor league camp was supposed to open was March 12th, which is when baseball was basically shut down. We didn't have reporters in summer camp, but the Cardinals reported, a number of sources told us about that. And scouts have continued to follow teams in their instruction leagues. Cardinals didn't have an instruction league. But there's, you know, a lot of talent evaluators out there that are basically studying videos because MLB had a basically a cross agreement that they would share videos and information from their alternate camps with each other. So even though we weren't in Springfield, we didn't get a lot of access, scouts do. And so this year I incorporated into our process the work of a gentleman named Matt Thompson, who is the founder and runs a site called Prospects Live, which focuses on scouting reports for minor league players across the game. They have over 1,600 videos up on various prospects. And Matt Thompson specifically is Cardinals focused, has followed the Cardinals for a long time. And so he provides scouting reports based on the standard 20-80 scouting scale on all the tools of the prospects. And then I write about their environment. Where, what kind of year did they have in 2019? Where, what camps were they in 2020? What's the outlook for 2021? Where are they going to go for their careers? And so we're doing that for 50 prospects at the rate of one a day. We started about a week ago, and this will take us basically through the end of the year.
One of the interesting names you have is Delvin Perez, shortstop. He's a big kid, 6'3", 23rd overall pick in 2016. He dropped in that draft, but everybody thought, hey, this guy is a unique, tall, shortstop, talented kid. We've been waiting for him for a while now. Now we're heading into 2021. Where are we with a very familiar name if you follow the Cardinals in their minor league system, but Delvin Perez?
Well, Delvin Perez just finished his fifth year as a professional, believe it or not. It seems like yesterday, literally, that the Cardinals picked him in the first round. He fell a long ways because of a positive drug test, or the rumors were that he might have gone, as early as fifth or sixth in that draft. But Delvin Perez has yet to demonstrate offensively the potential that he showed as an amateur. And, drafted at the age of 17, and he was hitting in showcases, was hitting balls over the fences. But in his 4 years to play, and of course 1 year sitting out in 2020, he's only hit a total of 2 home runs as a professional, and he just hasn't developed offensively as he needs to be. He's basically a singles hitter, and he's got very good speed, very good reflexes, but isn't particularly good on the base pass either. And the question is whether Delvin Perez's glove and plus play on the infield is going to be enough to get him to the major leagues. And the reason I say that is that even while he's young, turns 22 soon, later this month, the reality is he has already become Rule 5 draft eligible. And what that is a draft that allows organizations to select players out of other organizations that they think might be ready for the major leagues. The Cardinals or other organizations would protect guys, move them to their 40-man roster, which exempts them from this Rule 5 draft. Delvin Perez isn't going to be protected. He's not going to be added to the 40-man roster because the reality is he's never played a game above low Class A at this point. And so, he's just not ready to be on any major league roster this coming year. And that's the rule. If you get taken in Rule 5, you have to stay at the major league level or be returned to your prior team. And then 2 more years and Delvin Perez can become a minor league free agent. And a player who's still 4 levels away from the majors, Delvin Perez has got to get going with the bat in a hurry. This lost year certainly hurt him. But he's got to get going in a hurry to be able to get to St. Louis before he's eligible to become a minor league free agent and he can go wherever he wants.
Sure. Zach Thompson, I'm asked all the time who I think could be the next prospect that has not made it to the big leagues but could see big league time in 2021. And the first name I mentioned, high draft choice out of Kentucky, a left-handed pitcher a couple years ago, Zach Thompson. Would you agree with that assessment?
Zach Thompson is a very, very interesting guy. He's a left-hander, solid plus fastball, slider, above average pitch. He's got a curveball as well. Doesn't throw his changeup as much, but I mean, a lefty who's got 4 pitches and can, get them over. And he can actually, crank up to the mid 90s above if he's in short bursts. So the question for a guy like Zach Thompson will be, will the Cardinals be tempted maybe to bring him ahead more quickly as a reliever? We've seen a number of players, going back to Carlos Martinez and others who started in relief because there wasn't a spot in the rotation and eventually then, move into the rotation. The only concern, the only caveat is that Zach Thompson in alternate camp in Springfield had a little bit of shoulder irritation and that slowed him down. Now, the word is that by the end of camp, he was just fine. But one of the reasons that Zach Thompson fell to the Cardinals in the first round in 2019 was that he had had some shoulder issues at Kentucky as well. And so this is another thing to watch. And, you never know with a guy with shoulder, potential shoulder problems, is relieving and a better thing for him, or is starting every fifth day a better? Don't know. And I don't want to overreact about the shoulder issues with Thompson, but that was definitely a concern earlier in camp.
Tommy Edman, if it started tomorrow, would be the second baseman of the St. Louis Cardinals. And we've talked about it, primarily in the minor leagues, shortstop. But he does have the ability to play all over the diamond. We saw that in the major leagues. Can play the outfield, can play third, he can play short, now second. How do you think he'll fare as we look at him being potential everyday second baseman and seeing the last of Colton Wong?
I think that defensively, Tommy Edman is going to be a very steady player at second base. I think he'll make the routine plays. He won't make the spectacular plays that we saw Colton Wong make. But he certainly has more than enough arm. We saw that he has enough arm to play third. So that's not going to be an issue. He's a smart guy, so he'll be positioned well. We haven't yet seen his chemistry in an extended period of time with Paul DeJong at short, but I'm assuming that can be okay. So I don't think second base will be, he won't necessarily be a gold glove, type of candidate like Colton Wong was, but I think he'll be solid there. I think the bigger question for me on Tommy Edman is, which offensive Tommy Edman is it going to be? Is it going to be the guy that was, just so-so this last year and, put second in the batting order, but really didn't, sparkle like he did as a rookie in 2019? And, it would be wonderful if one part of game of Tommy Edman's game could be plus, if he could be a plus hitter like he was in his rookie year, or if he could be a plus defender. I don't think he's going to be a plus defender. Now, again, you said as it is today, he's the second baseman. That's true. But, the Cardinals still could sign a veteran second baseman or a veteran third baseman, and that might shuffle Tommy Edman around. As you said before, we don't know about the DH. But I will tell you that if you look at the infield position for the St. Louis Cardinals, it's gotten thin in a hurry, because we saw Max Schrock left. The Cardinals tried to get him through waivers, and he was claimed by the Cubs. Brad Miller's a free agent, gone. Colton Wong's gone. And really the only guy that they've got in the minor leagues to step in and fill the gap is Edmundo Sosa, who is, again, primarily a shortstop, but he can also play second and third. So, Sosa could be a guy to come in and be a backup. But you look at the Cardinals infield and say, it seems like there could be a home for another major league tested player for a one-year deal or a two-year deal until we can see Nolan Gorman or Montero reach St. Louis. And it'll just depend on what the market is. I think the Cardinals could go either way. They could sign a second baseman or they could sign a third baseman, because we know Edman can play either place and do a respectable job. But, of course, without a DH, Matt Carpenter is pretty well, tied to be your third baseman, at least, most days.
Absolutely. I'll let you go with this, Brian, because I appreciate your time. What are you working on at thecardinalnation.com in addition to your top 50 prospect list?
Well, I'm going to be looking ahead at the Rule 5. I mentioned earlier that that draft will be coming up in early December as part of the virtual general managers or the virtual winter meetings. And by the 20th of this month, the Cardinals are going to have to decide which prospects that they want to protect, put on the 40-man roster. But, of course, because the 40-man roster is limited in size, you kind of have to, balance. You can't put all the guys on you want. You have to think about who might be taken and not. So we'll do some analysis there as well. And then I'll also go back. I'm working on an article to talk about the strategy the Cardinals might take in the offseason if they want to be potentially a little more creative than the current path, which appears to be try to sign Wainwright and Yachty and a few complimentary pieces.
Always love it, Brian. Great info as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll catch you up next Wednesday.
Thank you, Dan.
That's Brian Walden of thecardinalnation.com.